It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The United Nations annual climate conference gets underway today in Azerbaijan.
For the next 12 days at COP29, world leaders and delegates will try to figure out how to pay for damages of human-caused climate change, increase transparency in how countries reach their climate goals, impose rules on carbon credit trading, and more.
In a post to X, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says, once again, young people are taking the lead.
You are demanding action now, not later. And I'm on your side. Leaders must arrive in Baku with ambitions that match the urgency and scale of the challenge. Together, let's push leaders to deliver.
Last year, part of the conference looked into the effects of climate change on human health. Our next guest sees a big opportunity to put health at the center of climate negotiations.
Dr. Jonathan Patz is the Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor and the John P. Holton Endowed Chair of Health and the Environment at UW-Madison. Dr. Patz, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Oh, Kate, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invite.
As these climate talks get underway, can you give us a preview of what COP29 will be focusing on, as well as some of the health conversations that might come up?
Well, in COP29, it's more of a financing theme, trying to get nations to agree to come up with enough money for loss and damages that are already occurring across the world. So there's a lot of focus on how to get to the finance. Now in COP28, the instrument for financing loss and damages was put into place with a $1 billion pledge to set up that infrastructure. But countries really are not stepping up to the plate as far as their promises from the Paris Agreement a long time ago, providing $100 billion annually by the year 2020. That was the hope. We're not there. So there's a big focus on that in COP29. The other thing to point out, of course, I'm a health scientist. COP28 in Dubai last year, we call that the health conference of the parties. It was the first time ever that the Conference of the Parties dedicated a full day to highlight the centrality of health in the climate change discourse. And the head of the World Health Organization was there, and the head of the Conference of the Parties had sessions highlighting how important human health is. And so from that point of view, COP29 will continue on with that. The World Health Organization just yesterday released a special report for COP29, and the title of that report is Health is the Argument for Climate Action. Hmm. It starts off with the Director General of WHO reiterating that the climate crisis is a health crisis. And one quote I found interesting. He says, tackling climate change requires a radical shift in how we prioritize energy spending. Consider last year was a record-breaking year for fossil fuel subsidies. That's public money that is effectively exacerbating the climate crisis. And one other quote from the Director General, thinking about nationally determined commitments to reduce our emissions, he said, and I quote, "We must not think of the commitments as an expenditure. These are investments in a healthier future."
But Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the WHO, he also says in that report that the tools to meet these challenges are already at hand. They exist in the world. What does the WHO envision?
Well, we recognize how important reducing our fossil fuel emissions can benefit health right away when you think about the 8 million premature deaths from air pollution that occur around the world. 5 million of those are directly attributed to burning fossil fuels. Wisconsin, actually, there was an analysis showing that if we could reduce our emissions and get to clean energy, the air pollution benefits would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,900 lives, almost 2,000 lives could be saved every year in Wisconsin from the healthy air quality from that. So, other aspects, how we design our cities is so important, thinking about sedentary lifestyle from too much dependence on private motorized vehicles. So we need to design cities more for people-powered transportation, bikes and walking. Certainly getting to more plant-forward diets would be both beneficial for our cardiovascular health, but also reduce the destruction of the rainforests, for example, to grow livestock. And plant-forward diet would be much more environmentally friendly.
You are putting out a number of examples here, and you attended the COP28 last year in Dubai. And I'm just wondering, how do you move these efforts forward? How do you move the world around these types of changes 1 year later, even decades later?
I think we can't ignore the election that we just had and some expected change in direction. I think that we assume that the new administration will pull out of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, where we have these climate summits, as they did when in 2016. But just as health is not a partisan issue, climate change should not be a partisan issue, especially as you hear the Director General of the World Health Organization reiterating that the climate crisis is a health crisis. So, the outcome of this election makes it that much more important for those of us in the health field to communicate the centrality of human health in discussions about climate change. There's more common ground around health than there is around environment. So I think this is something that we need to strengthen this messaging. There's a wonderful organization in Wisconsin, the Healthy Climate Wisconsin Group, which is doctors and nurses and other health professionals statewide that are talking to heads of hospitals and there's a big movement in the healthcare arena to to take on climate change. The National Academy of Medicine has a grand challenge on climate change, health and equity, and this is something that they put as high priority. So I think that certainly the health community recognizes the priority that the climate challenge is for us. And I think, pushing this as a nonpartisan issue is based around the science and the concern for our patients and the population at large, that I think we just need to continue to communicate this to people.
We are talking about climate change's impact on health as COP29, the annual United Nations Climate Conference, gets underway. Our guest is Dr. Jonathan Patz, a professor of health and the environment at UW-Madison. Dr. Patz, it sounds like there is more collaboration, more coordination going on here between different aspects and industries. The World Health Organization urging world leaders at COP29 to abandon, quote, the siloed approach to addressing climate change and health. What impact do you see in these silos or separate tracks to working out solutions to a warming planet?
In my area of public health, we take that very seriously. We have a new NIH center, and we're the center is called Health First Climate Action Research Center, showing how climate actions, be it in reducing emissions from electricity generation to designing better transportation that promotes physical fitness, green space for mental health. These are areas that are, they may be policies to reduce climate change and greenhouse gas emissions, but at the same time, they benefit our health. So there's a lot to be gained there. At COP29, you know, not only are they looking across sectors, but they're talking about getting to a zero carbon economy in an equitable way. They're talking about the just transition so that people, workers in fossil fuels will have places to go, other jobs. There are more green jobs than there are in fossil fuels. And the other thing that I noticed in the upcoming COP29 is that they want to put people at the center, ensuring climate action creates jobs, improves health.
It makes me think about the World Health Organization's report with its three overlapping circles of the Venn diagram of people, place, planet. All these things are interconnected.
Yes, they are absolutely interconnected. You know, we can't think about taking care of our health simply by medicines and hospitals. Our health depends on the health of natural resources and functioning ecosystems and a stable climate. And the other thing is that when we think about climate change, you know, it's, for me, it's, there's more opportunity than sacrifice, especially these days when the economics have changed. I mean, the cheapest way now to generate electricity is from renewables. So we're in a new era when we think of the price of energy. That wasn't true 5 or 10 years ago. So I think that, you know, it's hard to turn that back now that we are seeing how much cheaper it is to go with renewable energies, so that indeed the right choice can be the cheaper choice and the easier choice.
You've been at this a long time, studying global health, the impacts of climate, and over time you've shifted the perspective of your research from looking at the health problems that are caused by fossil fuels to considering the health benefits of cutting pollution. Can you explain that shift in mindset and focus and how it impacts research?
Kate, I'm glad you brought that up. I've actually rebranded my research group. We're called the Climate Solutions for Health Lab. And it's because I think that the health benefits of a low carbon economy are so enormous that to focus more on the health risks from climate change, of which there are many, the risks from heat waves to air pollution to infectious diseases, malnutrition, mental health risks. But when you look at the solutions, when you look at what happens when you have clean energy and you avoid 8 million premature deaths from clean energy, and when you avoid about 11 million deaths from unhealthy diets, especially high red meat diets. And when you look at the health benefits of 4 million people from having more active transportation, more walking and biking, those numbers add up. You know, that's almost a third to half of all premature deaths every year simply by getting to low carbon energy, food systems, and transportation. So I have shifted my focus because of the enormity of the health benefits of a low carbon economy, that I think that's where we can shift policy a little faster. You don't even have to believe in climate science to recognize the health benefits of clean air, healthier diets, and cities designed more for people that promote physical fitness. That's something that everyone should be able to agree on, no matter what their beliefs in climate are, no matter what their political ideology is. I mean, again, this is not a political issue. This is about our health. Mm-hmm. And And so I think that this is where, if policymakers understand that it's a win-win, it's a win to stabilize climate, but also it's a win for population-wide health, that I hope that decisions can be made faster and be more lasting.
Dr. Patz, circling back to COP29 here, as the 11 days unfold, what will you be watching for most?
I think what I would most be watching for is the doubling down of all of the healthcare individuals and health organizations that are already involved with this negotiation to recognize their needed leadership in making sure that the health messaging is loud and clear coming into the COP29 meeting, because of the political winds, especially in the United States, that the shifting in priorities that will happen soon. The climate discourse needs to recognize the centrality of health, and health should not be politicized. I'd like to see, and I think I would expect, that anyone working in health would just increase the volume to make sure that decision makers understand that this is not something that is just about the environment and stabilizing the climate. It is absolutely about our health and our health today and the health of future generations.
Dr. Patz, thank you for joining us.
Oh, Kate, it's been a pleasure.
That was Dr. Jonathan Patz, a professor of health and the environment at UW-Madison. He talked with us about how CO2 pollution harms human health as the United Nations climate talks get underway today in Azerbaijan.
Hey, if you follow Wisconsin Public Radio on social media outlets, did you know that we have not one, but two separate Facebook feeds?
In addition to the one called Wisconsin Public Radio, you can also follow us at WPR Music, Arts, and Culture.
As that name suggests, the feed is less about the breaking news and the politics. It's all about things happening in creative culture around the state and people doing interesting things in communities all around the state, communities just like yours.
You can check it out, especially if you need a break from the news. Once again, it's WPR Music, Arts, and Culture on Facebook. Join the conversation.